Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz. It hasn't been a pleasant few months for UMass President Marty Meehan. The purchase of Mount Ida College this spring led to a no-confidence vote against Meehan at UMass Boston that then caused a revolt against hiring a new chancellor for that school. Many say they're surprised that Meehan didn't recognize the deal would have been so controversial. WBUR's Deborah Becker sat down with Meehan this afternoon and began by asking him if he now feels that he should have handled the Mount Ida purchase differently.
Well, you could always communicate more effectively. In this case, I am confident, and the Board of Trustees unanimously were confident, and in fact, the Attorney General was confident that it was better for the University of Massachusetts and our students to have purchased Mount Ida. It was also better, actually, for those students and faculty members at Mount Ida who actually got their payout. You got to remember, Mount Ida was declaring bankruptcy in federal court the day that we closed. And if we hadn't closed, they would have declared federal bankruptcy, and there would have been no protection for employees, no protection for faculty, and none for students. As it turns out, we will have at least 500 students that will become part of UMass. It could be higher than that. All of our four campuses, undergraduate campuses, have Mount Ida students who are coming. They're paying either less money or the same money to come. And frankly, getting a degree from the University of Massachusetts is better for the Mount Ida students. But the whole Mount Ida situation was really difficult in the sense that you have a private institution that's closing. They accepted a freshman class knowing full well they were closing. But in the long run, I think UMass's involvement was a positive thing. And in the long run, having UMass Amherst students allowed to have internships, co-ops, to form partnerships with business and industry in the place where 80% of the jobs are in this state makes perfect sense. You can't have a flagship campus and have an internship program and have all your internships be in Springfield and Hadley. It just doesn't work.
Now, of course, UMass Boston feels slighted. They say, why not use UMass Boston for this? Why did you have to go and buy a struggling private university?
Because there isn't any room at UMass Boston right now. We've just been able to get 1,000 beds on the campus. Fortunately, UMass Boston has sold out the new beds on campus, but they don't have housing on the Boston campus. What Amherst could have done, they own a piece of property in Waltham, and they could have built housing and food service and a business center there. It would have cost them $350 million. They're getting Mount Ida for $75 million. This is totally paid for by UMass Amherst students.
This led to a no-confidence vote on the part of folks at UMass Boston, saying that they felt that they were ignored in this whole process, and they feel that UMass Boston has not been considered on an equal footing, I guess, as some of the other campuses.
Yeah, and I certainly will say I disagree with that. UMass Boston is a priority, at least a priority of mine. It's one of the reasons why I fought hard for Boston after 50 years to finally get housing on campus. And the reason why I fought to get housing on campus is because students who live on campus that are part of academic programming have a higher likelihood of academic success. I think as a result of having housing on the Boston campus, we're going to see an increase in retention rates, increase in student success rates, and ultimately an increase in graduation rates.
What do you think of the overall no-confidence vote over this, though? I mean,
look, there was a Wall Street Journal piece about 3 weeks ago. There are more no-confidence votes of presidents and chancellors throughout the country today in higher education than there ever have been. And that's reflective of the fact that higher education is changing. There are tough decisions that need to be made every day in higher education. And my job is to, the Amherst campus, this is an Amherst campus proposal, and it's in the long-term interest of UMass Amherst, and it won't hurt UMass Boston. And the fact of the matter is, tough decisions need to be made. Boston's a campus that have had some serious financial problems. They had a $30 million deficit at the beginning of the fiscal year. There are a lot of cuts on the campus, and people are unhappy about those cuts, and that's to be expected.
This dispute, though, seemed to have spilled over into the whole search for a new chancellor at UMass Boston.
It appears to have been. I can tell you about the search. We had the most diverse search committee in the history of UMass for any chancellor. And the committee voted unanimously for three finalists. They weren't insiders. They weren't politically connected. There were a group of faculty that didn't feel that any of them were qualified.
Well, actually, we have a piece of tape of one of those faculty members, Latin American Studies Professor Reyes Cole Teleca. And this is what this professor said about the three finalists for the job.
My 25 years at UMass Boston, I have never seen consensus among 200 faculty members. The consensus was that none of the three candidates were appropriate or a good match for us at that moment.
So the UMass Boston folks said none of these candidates.
Yeah, I think it was more about budget cuts on the campus. It was more about the Mount Ida deal. It was more about just unhappiness generally with the campus. The bottom line is we need to move forward. I appointed Catherine Newman to be interim, and if we can get some help solving some of these issues of budget and infrastructure, then I think that we can get where we need to go to.
And just for folks who don't know, the three candidates did withdraw. Catherine Newman's been appointed interim chancellor. At this point, in terms of making someone permanent chancellor, those plans are tabled for the moment.
And they certainly wait and are. You can't have a search like that and then open it up. It's at least 1 or 2 years away from starting a new search.
Mm-hmm. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh has waded into all of this, entertaining the idea of the city taking over UMass Boston, and he has volunteered to sit on the next search committee for a chancellor. What do you think of that?
Well, I'd love to have him serve on a search committee, and there's no evidence in the country, if you look at University Cross, there's no evidence that a city can run a university better than a independent system of governance like we had at UMass, which is modeled after the University of California. I don't think the mayor would seriously consider taking over UMass Boston with the debt of UMass Boston. That represents a real challenge. So what we need to do is grow the enrollment that we need to generate the revenue that we need. We have to increase online learning. If UMass Boston had the same online learning, for example, that Lowell has, they wouldn't have a deficit because Lowell gets $20 million in revenue from their online program. So we need to develop online. We need to look at professional master's degrees. I think with the construction subsiding, I think Boston is in a very, very strong position. And the faculty at UMass Boston, if you look at the research, the increase in research expenditures, higher than over the last year than any point in time in their history. So I feel very positive about the future of UMass Boston.
Is the construction subsiding? I think that's what many people think of when they go on the campus.
Yeah,
it is subsiding.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the last active construction project is a housing, which is going to be finished.
Now, if you look at all of this and you look at Mount Ida and what's happened there, and then the no confidence vote and the chancellor search, former state higher education commissioner Richard Freeland told the Boston Globe that he was surprised that in your background as a politician, 14 years in Congress under your belt, that you wouldn't have realized what a bombshell this might have been. What do you say to that? What lessons do you think you've learned from
this?
Well, look,
I knew that, first of all, Richard Freeman is on the payroll of Northeastern. Hmm. To be honest with you, when you're setting up a co-op program and Northeastern really has set the standard for co-op, it seems a little like a conflict of interest from my perspective. That's first and foremost. Secondly, I knew that Mount Ida wasn't going to be popular with people. I don't get paid to make popular decisions. You do that in politics. You worry about optics in politics. I make decisions on what's best for the students of the University of Massachusetts. And in this instance, this was an opportunity for the University of Massachusetts Amherst, in collaboration with the other campuses, to acquire a piece of property so that they could provide their students with co-ops, internships, experiential learning, and interact with the greater Boston community. You have to make tough decisions sometimes when you're university president, and it's not meant to be a popularity contest. This is this was in the long-term interest of the University of Massachusetts students, all of the students. Boston may find a way that they can utilize this campus. Lowell may find a way that they can utilize this campus. And the bottom line is we have at least 500 students from Mount Ida. that wouldn't have been taken care of otherwise.
But a member of the legislature, a few members of the legislature, have said that perhaps there should be more communication with lawmakers because the state does give a significant amount of funding, maybe not enough according to you. But
well, it's about 47th in the country in terms of state funding.
Which is, what, $500 million a year?
About $500 million on a $3.3 billion budget.
Mm-hmm. But the state provides that funding, and some state lawmakers have suggested that because of that, maybe they should have more of a say when these types of deals go forward. Should
there
they?
Is a specific law. No, there's a specific law that says if a public entity, public universities, if they enter into a real estate transaction, that it can be, it should be private, because if you enter in publicly, show that you're interested in real estate, the price is going to be jacked up because it's a public. That's why there's a law that says. That that's why there's a law that says it can be private and it should be private while the negotiations are taking place. So I don't think it makes any sense to put public universities at a disadvantage over private universities by saying that they have to publicly declare their interest in a piece of property. What's interesting about it is Wheelock College failed.
Right.
BU picked them up, laid off 109 employees. Nobody said anything. So we seem to live in a state where there's a different set of rules for a public university than a private university, which is part of the challenge. It's one of the reasons why the state doesn't fund UMass the way they fund other public research colleges across the country. So I think a little bit of this is, UMass can't, have the same opportunities that private universities do. But there are going to be another 10 closings of universities over the next 7 or 8 years in Massachusetts. And this isn't a mystery. All you have to do is go look at the public records and look at the 990s of small privates. It's a challenging time demographically. All the privates can't survive. The price point is too high.
But then what does that mean for the big publics like you? Right?
It'll affect everyone. But up until now, what has happened is UMass is the only sector of public higher education in Massachusetts where enrollment has actually gone up. If you look at the state universities and you look at the community colleges, enrollment has gone down. UMass's price point puts us in a much more competitive place vis-a-vis many of the small privates that have higher price points that aren't nationally ranked, that aren't U.S. News and World Tier 1. So we're in a stronger position than we would be, but I think it's really important. In fact, after the last Board of Trustees meeting, I had an expert come in to talk to us about the demographics of colleges and universities vis-a-vis the number of high school graduates. So I think it's something that everyone better be aware of. But I also think Massachusetts better figure out when a private university closes, and as I say, there are going to be a number of them that close over the next 5, 7 years, maybe 3 years. I think that probably the state should do a better job of studying the 990s, looking at the economics of these institutions. And UMass wants to be there to play a role to attract these students if institutions close, and to try to find a way where we can find more efficiencies and synergies that would make UMass stronger in the long run.
So when we talk about tuition and UMass being competitive when compared with private universities, what about tuition this year? How's it looking?
Well, I think that we're going to be able to hold it. First of all, the costs have gone up vis-a-vis inflation, about 3% a year, and it's been that way for quite some time. We're going to be able to, I believe, keep tuition at 2.5% in terms of an increase this year. That puts us below many of our competitors in Massachusetts and beyond. So that's what it looks like it's going to be this year. We don't have a state budget yet, so we don't know whether or not the state is going to pay for collective bargaining agreements that they negotiate with our employees. In other words, the state tells us what our employees are going to get paid. They lay out the parameters. We don't know if they're going to fund that or not. If they don't fund it, then that would mean tuition could go higher. And we don't know ultimately what the state budget is going to be, but I would project that we'll be at about 2.5%.
When it comes to tuition, what about out of state? students. There was a study done by the Pioneer Institute that said since 2010, high school students from out of state who had lower combined SAT scores had a better admission rate into UMass Amherst than in-state students. We actually did a show about college admissions, and we asked people about this, and we spoke with a woman who called in, and her name is Carolina, and she said she had a 3.8 GPA when she applied to 10 schools. Let's listen.
When it came to the state schools, I got waitlisted, and that was a huge impact on my life because coming from a low-income family, having to choose a private school over a state school, it has an impact down the road, especially with I had specifically received a scholarship that would have given me free tuition. And I had to give that up because I was waitlisted.
And so Carolina says she eventually chose a small private school in Massachusetts that gave her a lot of scholarship money. I mean, how do you explain this rate of acceptance for?
Well, first of all, Massachusetts residents actually pay less tuition because of out-of-state students. In other words, out-of-state students subsidize in-state students. So students who are from Massachusetts pay less in tuition because of out-of-state students. It's not easier for out-of-state students to get into UMass Amherst than, and there's no disparity between the entry criteria. We looked at the numbers. I asked UMass Amherst to look at the numbers, and if you go program by program, the SAT and GPA for in-state and out-of-state is identical. Pioneer Institute, who did this, was looking at aggregate numbers, and there is a disparity between this because there are more Massachusetts residents in the more selective programs, engineering, for example, Eisenberg School, the Honors College, which pulls the averages for in-state students up if you look at the aggregate. So it's not really, if you look at the actual aggregate numbers, we really don't, UMass Amherst doesn't accept higher. They're basically the same quality in-state and out-of-state. And by the way, they limit what they take in out-of-state. It's about 28-29%. If you want to be a world-class public research university, you can't have 90% of the students come from the same state. You want diversity in colleges and universities. One of the reasons why, as I mentioned earlier, if you take the 8 top privates in Massachusetts, they've cut the number of Massachusetts students they accept by about 70% over the last 40 years. So we want to have a diverse student body. And UMass Amherst takes more in-state students today than they ever have.
But there are some who say, not just UMass Amherst, but the system itself, is it taking fewer in-state students because in-state tuition is cheaper? And
we're taking more Massachusetts students at UMass than we ever have. We're breaking records every year by taking more students than we ever have. It is true that it's getting more difficult to get into some of our campuses, UMass Amherst, for example, UMass Lowell, for example. But the fact of the matter is, if you want, Massachusetts needs a world-class research institution. And world-class research institutions needs really high-performing students to meet all the challenges. So it's actually a good thing. If I read the Pioneer Institute study, they seem to say it's a bad thing because it's UMass Amherst has become a very selective university. Well, the great public universities in America are selective. And by the way, those universities, the great public universities that have the great reputations, Michigan State, University of Michigan, University of Texas, Austin, if you look at those states, they take 40% out-of-state students.
I'm not saying they shouldn't be selective, and I understand that, but how do you balance that as a public university system, right, to be the public higher education community for an entire state, right? You're supposed to be helping educate the entire state, and yes, you do want to be competitive and selective. So how do you balance those two?
Well, we have three sectors of public higher education in Massachusetts. UMass is the public research part. And the standards, all four of our campuses are nationally ranked. Our medical school has a national reputation. There's a state university system, and there's also a community college system.
You've been on the job for 3 years, right? And when you came on board, you said you wanted to stay for 10.
Did I say that?
You did. That's what I read anyway. You can blame the media and say they misquoted you.
No. That's an accurate quote.
Is that still the case?
Yeah, the Board of Trustees asked me that. Yes. Look, I didn't take this job because I thought it was going to be easy, and I didn't take this job because, I wasn't willing to make difficult decisions. No, I'm in for the long haul. I I grew up here in Massachusetts. I'm committed to Massachusetts. I understand how the economy of this state works. I know what the University of Massachusetts means to economic development and the future growth of the university. And UMass is, I intend to. I'm not walking away because tough decisions have to be made. I've been making tough decisions in various roles that I've had my entire life. So, I'm committed to the University of Massachusetts.
All right. Marty Meehan, president of the University of Massachusetts System, I want to thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
That was Marty Meehan, president of the 5-campus University of Massachusetts System. He was in our studios earlier this afternoon to speak with WBUR correspondent Deborah Becker. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Evan Horowitz, and this is Radio Boston.